This is a Dharmanet presentation.
First line in pretty much every sutta that the Buddha taught. Okay, so in fact, it's one of those things that's so common in Buddha's teachings that most of the time it gets left out. You know, it's one of these kind of stock passages every time. Yeah, but if it's told in full, when the Buddha was about to give the Dhamma talk, he would always say, "Tang sunata sadukan manasikarota bahasisami." This, you should listen to this carefully and pay close attention to what I'm going to say. Yeah? So the beginning of all Dhamma is listening. Of course, in the Buddha's day, it's a long, long time ago, no internet. I don't know if you knew that, but there was no internet once upon a time. True. No iPhones. Yes, there was a world before iPhones. No books. There was even a world before books. Not even the manuscripts, right? Nothing. We're not quite sure whether there was writing in the time of the Buddha or not, but certainly wasn't very prominent, and certainly the teachings weren't passed down in writings. There was just listening. So if you didn't do what the Buddha said, right? Tang sunata sadukang manasikarota. Listen to this. Pay close attention. If you didn't do that, well, you're kind of stuffed, really. You haven't got a hope. What are you going to do? You walk out of the room and you can't remember anything. Terrible, you know, when you listen to a Dhamma talk and you think, oh, that was a really good Dhamma talk, and then afterwards someone says, so how was the talk? And you say, oh, it was really good. You say, what was it about? You say, it's really good. You think that's a problem? Yes. Let me tell you, that's not a problem. The problem is when you give a Dhamma talk and then people ask you, what was it about? And say, take a while. So, listening, yeah? So the very fact that the Buddha is encouraging that is encouraging some kind of act, right? They're actually doing something, right, in a sense. It's not just purely a passive thing. This is something I think that sometimes people can get into, where you just sort of sit down and meditate during the Dhamma talk and you just sort of zone out, and it's as if the Dhamma can just kind of wash into you and just kind of absorb without listening to it. I don't think that really works very effectively. Listening takes a bit of work. Yeah? Cognizing words takes a bit of work. You have to keep reminding yourself, pay attention. Connect the ideas. Yeah? Sometimes if you're reading a book, you sort of lose attention when you're reading, and then you get to a few pages later and you think, hang on, what were those last few pages about? I've got no idea. But at least if it's a book, you can go back and read it again, right? Mm-hmm. Listening to a Dhamma talk, so maybe it's better if you watch it on YouTube or something afterwards, and then you can rewind it if you've got something. But normally we can't rewind it if we get something. One of the reasons why the Buddha used repetition. Right? The Buddha was very helpful. He wanted people to understand. Yeah? So he keeps on repeating it. If you miss it the first time, you catch it the second or the third. But that's telling us something about that quality of attention, that it's something we actually have to do. Right? It's not just something that just happens. Listening is a very important sense. You think about, when we think about the way that we use words, right? We words have a spectrum of meaning, like what I was talking about beforehand, where the Buddha used ordinary language words to talk about things. So you move from an ordinary language way of thinking about something towards a more subtle way. And if you think about, you know, very ordinary sense, what listening is for, right? So imagine that you're a wild deer. Right? What is listening for? Right? Number one, it's for knowing if there's a tiger around. Yeah? This is very important. It's an evolutionary advantage. So listening gives us a kind of an all-round awareness, which seeing doesn't, right? Seeing is much more focused on a particular thing. Hearing is all around. And hearing tends to very much be connected with that sense of kind of alerting, doesn't it? Yeah? That's why when you're meditating and you hear a sound, then you jump. And you even know that if you're at home alone in the night time or something like that, you hear a footstep or something like that. What's that? And this is this kind of remnant of this evolutionary conditioning. I've been there in Thailand in the forest for a couple of years, and you get very used to the sounds in the forest. Yeah? It's quite, you know, it's pretty quiet, but you know, there's the birds and there's different sounds and so on that you hear. And so one day I was walking through the forest, and it was just the middle of the day. It was kind of nothing special. It wasn't very deep forest or anything. It was just near the centre of the monastery. And as I was walking along, I heard this sound. And immediately that I heard it, I knew that I didn't know what that was. It wasn't one of the ordinary sounds. It wasn't a bird. Right? It wasn't a snake. It wasn't. There's a kind of a rustle or a hiss sound that the ants make when you get a lot of ants that are kind of moving. It wasn't squirrels running through the trees. What was it? I knew that whatever that was, very, very soft sound, a very kind of soft, deliberate sound on the leaves under in the forest. Slow and deliberate. I knew that I didn't know what that was, and I had to find out, so I sort of carefully walked off the path. And then about 10 metres or 15 metres off the path, there was this huge tarantula. So this big, walking along the floor of the forest. And it's such a tiny sound. Yeah, I wasn't listening for it, but I knew, that's something. I haven't heard that before. Yeah, this is when I realise how sensitive these things can be. So we listen. There's an active process of listening. When you hear, for example, if you hear the Dhamma, if you're listening to a Dhamma talk, then there's a certain inquiry going on. You notice how quickly or how easily that we can go from listening to talking. Right? Listening and talking are very closely related, aren't they? Normally, you're in a conversation. You listen a bit, you talk a bit. You listen a bit, you talk a bit. Yeah? And actually, that's part of that same cycle. So listening isn't something which is entirely passive. It also involves a response to it. So when you're listening to Dhamma, or perhaps listening to some chanting, or even just listening to the sounds of nature, or listening to anything which is peaceful, listening to the sound of the ocean or something like that, you can feel there's something soothing to it. It has a quality of maybe a rhythm or a tone or something. So as well as having words having a content, they also have an emotional tone. Right? There's something about it's reading, you know, a talk is not the same as listening to it. Yeah? There's so much that's lost. So imagine what it would have been like in the time of the Buddha, when you're going out there to the forest or in the moonlight and listening to the Buddha teaching the Dhamma. What would that have been like? Imagine how quiet everybody would be. Really wanting to listen. Everyone really intent. Bending their ears. Not wanting to miss a single thing. Not wanting to remember it, because if you don't remember it, it's gone. You can't just say, oh, I'll download the MP3 afterwards. No. You remember it or it's gone. Yeah? It's not a magic trick. It's not like a special thing. You're remembering it. You listen to it clearly. You remind yourself of it as you're going through. Remind yourself. It takes a bit of work. A few times you remind yourself. This was the first section. This was about this. When these points were talked about. Then that one. And that one. And that one. And you remember. Yeah? You build it up in your mind. You build up the pattern in your mind as you're listening. Yeah? And you actually create, if you like, create the dot points or the headings of the talk in your head, yeah, as you're listening, and then at the end of it you can remember everything that was said. Yeah? It's not at all impossible. I've done some talks where I've given translations, and one of the funny things about doing translations is when you I remember one time I was doing it at Bodh Gaya. And there was a monk there, Thai monk was his name now, from what Mahathat, I can't remember. But luckily for me, my Thai isn't very good, but luckily for me his Thai was very clear, and I could understand everything he was saying, which was good. But often what happens if you, I know this myself, because when you're talking, when you start out, you sort of say yes, one sentence, and then the translator, and then another sentence, and the translator, and you do that a few times. Gradually you get more kind of relaxed and you kind of and it gets longer and longer and longer and then eventually they kind of go on for ages, you know? And it was quite interesting for me because I hadn't done a lot of translation and I was sitting there and I actually had a notebook so I could note things down, but as I went along I realised I didn't need to. Yeah, I just listened very, very carefully, made a note of all the points that he was saying as he was saying them, reminded myself of them, ran them over a few times. And then, no matter how long he spoke to it, and then I could just translate the whole thing. You can do it. It's just a skill of the mind. So that attitude and it is a skill. That skill of listening is also something which you bring into meditation. You can do it quite literally, actually. You can just sit there and listen, right? That's just sound. That's perfectly good. You can just meditate on sound. Yeah, I did that when we were doing our med mob in Sydney, and we sat down at the near the opera house. And was anyone there for the med mob near the opera house? You were there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Remember, it was really noisy that day.
Yes, it was the cacophony of the city.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Jackhammering.
Yeah, because they were actually demolishing the steps of the opera house, right? We thought it'd be nice, you know, in the park, in the opera house, everything. But no, there were all these big machines there, and they were smashing the steps to bits, right? So I just thought, okay, well, I'll just meditate on the cacophony. Yeah, what else? Why try to resist it? So I just thought, okay, just opened up my ears, opened up my mind, and then just let everything wash through. It could be perfectly peaceful. Just let everything go through. It's wonderful. Yeah. So that was a beautiful hour's meditation. So it's very one of the aspects of meditation that's very important is that passive aspect, which is very similar to passively listening. You know, if I mentioned before that like listening and talking is like a pair, right? And not always, but in most situations, like if you're with somebody, you know, it's good to have a roughly kind of 50-50, right? Talking and listening and so on. You know, that's probably a sign that it's a reasonably healthy kind of dialogue, right? And if it's like 95% talking on one side and 5% listening and then vice versa, it's probably a sign that, you know, communication isn't so good. So what's the percentages in your own mind? Yeah, when you sit there, how much in your own mind are you talking and how much are you listening? If we're going to take that standard, right, you should listen at least half the time. I think most of us are kind of struggling to make 5 or 10%. Yeah. Interesting way of thinking about it, isn't it? Yeah. You're having a conversation with yourself. How much of the time are you listening to what you're saying? No wonder you keep talking, because you never listen to yourself, right? It's very true, isn't that? Isn't that true? You know, if people keep on talking and talking and talking, I want to be heard. And you never listen. And even when you meditate, you have a chance to listen to yourself and you don't do it. You think, oh no, I've got to get rid of these thoughts, I've got to ignore this, I've got to get rid of them. And so you still don't listen to yourself. So the more you try to get rid of the thoughts, the more you try to yell and the more you want to hear. So just listen. Oh, okay. That's all right. It's just a thought. Thoughts are just thoughts. You've got thousands of them. All right. And so that passive aspect of listening is something that's very receptive, very accepting. Whatever's happening, that's okay. Let it in. And then let it go. There's a lovely verse in the Sutta Nipata where the Buddha says that the little streams make lots of noise, but the great rivers flow silently. It's beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. Little streams make lots of noise, but the great rivers flow silently. So, which one are you? Yeah. A lot of noise, little creek, yeah, or a great river. How much noise does the Ganges River make? Not a lot. So if we take that chance to listen to what we have to say, listen to what's around us, just sit there, just listen. But not just listening in a completely passive way. Engaging also with that listening. Just like if you're listening to a talk or trying to comprehend something, you turn your mind to it, you bend an ear. It's hard to describe exactly what it's like, but I think you know what I mean. Is that there's a difference to actually going forward to listen to something. This is something that I learned when I was a musician, that if people are not paying attention, then one of the ways to get people's attention is to play quieter. Because what happens is that when you listen, that when something's very loud, you switch off. Yeah? Your ears close down, just like when light is very bright, your pupils, you know, shrink and you let less light in. The same thing, your ears let less sound in when the sound is hard, when the sound is a lot of sound. And you find if you're playing music and the noise is very loud, everyone feels happy to talk to somebody next to them or make a noise or not pay attention because the sound is just too much. If you play quieter, then nobody's going to talk. Right? They're going to be, shh, don't say anything. Yeah? They want to listen. Yeah? When you're in places where the music's really, really loud, no one's listening to it. right? You go and listen to the clubs and stuff like that. No one's actually listening to the music. It's just this kind of physical kind of thumping, thumping, thumping is going on. You can't actually hear it anyway. You go and watch an orchestra or somebody playing the, you know, acoustic guitar or something quiet, and people are sitting there very quietly and actually really listening, bending their ears, actively engaging with it. So this is that quality that we should bring into our mind. It's kind of active turning towards something. Not just letting it pass, not just sort of vaguing out. Right? Don't vague out in meditation. It's not worth it. You've got plenty of other times to do that, you know, daydreaming or whatever. Pay attention. Yeah? It doesn't mean, you know, forcing yourself or trying to control or anything like that. It means being interested in what you're doing. We've been talking with some of the monks about this, the use of the word concentration, and the more that we sort of look at it and see it, the more we see what a bad word that is to use in meditation, and they usually use it as a translation of samadhi in the Eightfold Path and in Buddhist teachings. They translate samadhi as right concentration. The more I look at it, the more, what a terrible translation that is. Samadhi is like this exalted, beautiful state of unification and oneness and complete stillness and letting go. It's got nothing to do with what we mean when we talk about concentration, right? What does concentration mean, yeah? The kid's in the back of the class, bored, doesn't care. The teacher's like, concentrate, yeah? Concentration means make yourself pay attention to something that you really don't want to pay attention to. Right? That's usually how we use the word concentration. Concentration span is how long can you make yourself pay attention to something when you're not really very interested in it. You know, we talk about people with reduced concentration spans and all of these kinds of things. It's got nothing to do with samadhi. Nothing to do with it at all. These days, Ajahn Brahm uses stillness for samadhi. Perhaps oneness or unification would work. Stillness. But what it means basically is where everything comes together. It's a coherence, it's a coalescence. Nothing to do with concentration. So when we're listening, when we're bringing that spark of attention, it's not making yourself pay attention. It's having an interest. It's having a delight in knowing what is present, a delight in knowing what's real. Every sound that you hear, everything you see, every touch you feel, all of that is real, all of it is true. Isn't truth good, right? We live in this web of delusions and lies. A little bit of truth is really important. So you take an interest in that, a keen interest. Oh, what's that sound? Not trying to work out what the sound is, but just trying to hear it. We go through our life, our senses get so deadened, yeah? Through, just, we put stuff in our ears and our mouths and stuff, and it deadens the senses over a lifetime. So we freshen your senses. You can see things, you see colours, you hear sounds so much more vividly. This is what it's like when your consciousness becomes purified. We talk about these words like purification of the mind, not just an idea, it's not anything abstract, it's something that's very, very ordinary. Purification of your mind means that your mind works better because it's not clogged up with all crap. It's like your drain, that's all it is. Nothing exalted about it, it's just like banging Drano down the sink. Mm. That's what meditation is, the sink flows. You get rid of the bung Drano in your head, you know, your mind flows, yeah, get all the gunge out. Ah, you realize, ah, that's what it's supposed to be like. It's working properly. So when you're listening well, if you're listening to a talk or something like that, or listening to another person, then when you're listening to well, that there's a clarity to that, right? And there's a responsiveness to it. It's not just like being a tape recorder, right? It's not completely passive. There's a responsiveness. There's an involvement with that. And in fact, in a very subtle way, but also a very powerful way, a listener shapes what is said. Right? And if you're talking to someone, the quality of attention that you bring to that conversation is going to condition what is said as part of that conversation. It's not just what you say that conditions that, it's how you listen. Yeah? Same thing in a Dhamma talk. You think you're just sitting there? No. You think I'm giving the Dhamma talk? No. You're part of it as well. If it's a crap Dhamma talk, it's because of your fault. But it's true, like if you're speaking, you know, if you feel if the people are paying attention, if they're listening and so on, then, oh, you know, you draw something out. If everyone's like, bored, then it's really hard. You know? So we're involved, there's an involvement with listening. And so the same aspects apply when we bring that into mind and we bring that into meditation. There's an engagement. The listening doesn't just passively mean whatever's happening, I'm listening to it. But the very fact that you listen to it with that sense of care and attention will make what you say in your mind better. Just like if you listen in a conversation with somebody, you'll make that conversation better. Right? Ah, you listen to your mind, that conversation in your mind will get better. You'll have more meaningful things to say.
What if I try to listen but I don't get it?
You don't get it? Yeah, you will. You will. You mean inside your own head, or talking to someone, talking to other people as well, and you really try to listen, and it doesn't work? Yeah, of course it doesn't work. Yeah, that's why we communicate. That's why communication is difficult and complex and so on, and sometimes it really doesn't work. So just have to keep trying, keep engaging, keep asking questions. Ask them, can you explain it again? Yeah. But don't give up. Actually, that's really important. So many times we can listen to things. Yeah? You listen to teachings, you listen to Dhamma, you listen to things people say to you, you know? Things you say to yourself. Right? And it still doesn't work, does it? Yeah, they can tell you this is harmful, this is wrong, you shouldn't do this. And you know that they're right. But somehow it doesn't sink in. Yeah? So that clarity and that depth isn't there. But you keep training yourself. This is all just training. It's all just habit, that's all. You keep training yourself to listen. If it doesn't work once, you try it again. If it still doesn't work, you try it again, again and again. Remember that, how the Buddha repeated himself. Yeah. So many times. Why? Because that's what it takes. Yeah. You have to keep on going over and over and over again. Little bit by little bit, it sinks in. You keep on reminding yourself. Same thing, again and again and again. That's the nature of spiritual truths, right? Spiritual truths are not like learning motorcycle maintenance. That's a bad example, because obviously they are, because it was then in the art of motorcycle maintenance. Okay, that was a bad example. Anyway, something else. Cooking. Right? You learn one recipe, and then you can cook that, and you learn that, and you sort of more and more things. Spiritual wisdom isn't like that. Everything is impermanent. That's the deepest truth that you can understand. Right. If you can really understand that, then you're enlightened. Right. So learning spiritual stuff really isn't about learning anything new. It's not about learning anything you haven't heard before. It's about seeing, listening, knowing at deeper and deeper and deeper levels. Again and again and again. I know everything is impermanent. But still... just this one more time, one more cigarette.